Justice Jefferson is not sitting in this case. The court is ready to hear argument in Board of Adjustment versus Whitman.
May it please the court, Mr. Bruce Robertson and Mr. Douglas Alexander will present argument for petitioners. Petitioners have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Robertson will open the first 7 minutes. Mr. Alexander will present the rebuttal.
I represent the Board of Adjustment in the City of San Antonio. The question in the case is, did Mark Marietta have non-conforming use rights under the City's Unified Development Code, which is our zoning code? And it is in large part a case about definitions, and definitions in the construction area.
Let me ask you just one preliminary question. If we were to believe that quarrying operations do constitute a construction or a proposed construction, and I understand you don't agree that that's the case, but if we were to find that, like a parking lot or something else, that quarrying could be within the definition of a construction, then would you agree with the Court of Appeals that your reading of the definitional piece of the ordinance would read out of existence 35-3067?
Oh, no, not at all, Your Honor. 35-3067 is an extra limitation and an extra requirement of non-conforming use owners when they intend to complete construction on newly annexed property or start construction on newly annexed property. The director of the board said that this was not construction. It did not need requirements. It's digging a hole.
No, but what
it's
I'm
the
saying
opposite
is,
of construction.
But the premise to my question was, if we were fine that quarrying was construction,
if we were to find that it was,
then would you agree with the Court of Appeals that your construction of the definitional piece of use versus non-conforming use would read out of existence 35-3067?
No, I still don't. I still don't do that,
but
because it's misread. They picked out intention. The Court of Appeals, it's the method in the way the Court of Appeals reached their decision. They picked out the word intention. Bare subjective intention is constituting a non-conforming use, which they did not like and which may be agreed with them by most all people. We do not have intention. Intention is not the basis of the non-conforming use of Martin Marietta in this case. It's a hypothetical situation.
But I believe you said in your brief that you think planning would fit intention.
No, there was no planning, Your Honor, here either. Planning may evidence intention. But what we're talking about is leasing of property for a particular use, which is covered by the definition of in use and non-conforming use of the code.
Well, are there any parameters to your interpretation of what non-conforming use is?
Yes, I agree that subjective intention alone should not support a non-conforming use. Absolutely, Your Honor.
Well, and that's why I thought your brief said that it has to be planned. I think that's
what the court said. They said if you're planning to do something, you're intending to do something. And what we're talking about is a person who buys a piece of property or leases a piece of property, and then all of a sudden, for no specific purpose at all, and all of a sudden the city annexes the property, and he says, "Oh well, I intended from the very beginning to put a junkyard there. So therefore, I have a non-conforming use." No, there has to be a cutoff. I agree with that. But it is not met in this case. We have an objective act going out and buying a lease to continue operating a 60-year-old quarry.
But I'm still not sure I understand your answer to my first question. If you'll just let me try it one more time. If we find this is construction, if we disagree with the director below that the quarrying is construction,
okay,
tell me, how then does 35-3067 then fit into the scenario? Because if we do consider that construction, then under your argument, we would read out 35-3067.
No, I don't think so, because that's not the purpose of 35-3067. And I hope I'm not being obtuse, Your Honor.
Well, I'm not answering
your question.
Oh, I hope I'm not being obtuse.
And I'm not trying to be evasive, but 35-3067 is merely a statute that requires someone who is going to do construction.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
To go through that process.
If we consider this a proposed construction.
Yes.
Under the lease.
Right.
That would you then agree that you would have to go through, because it's a proposed construction, 35-3067?
I think we probably would, but it is not construction.
So your argument does, to a certain extent, hinge on our interpretation of what a proposed construction would be.
I don't think the result of the case depends upon it. Not at all, Your Honor. Not my argument. No. If you hold that it is a construction, this is merely a procedural faux pas that we should have gone through, or that Martin Marietta should have gone through 35-3067. It doesn't change the fact of nonconforming use, not one jot or tittle, Your Honor.
So you'd say then you'd get another chance to go do it through those procedures?
Well, I'm not so sure. I haven't thought about what would be the posture of the case, and I'm not so sure what you're going to rule. So
I can't
answer the question.
And let me ask you another quick question that sort of relates to that. Under the Court of Appeals remand to reconsider two particular items,
yes,
does the amended statute apply to the reconsideration?
You mean 43.002?
Yes.
No, I don't think it does at all. 43.002, Your Honor, is a prohibition statute against cities. It doesn't create nonconforming uses. It doesn't use the word or the term nonconforming uses. What 42003 merely says, cities cannot prohibit a continued use in the event of annexation if there is a certain set of circumstances.
Well, my understanding is you think you would be entitled to nonconforming rights on these tracks under 43002A2.
No, that's what they argue. That's what the respondents argue. I don't agree with that at all.
You don't think that would then allow you nonconforming rights?
I don't know that it would. Probably would. It may do that, but I think the court has to consider 43.002 as a very... It doesn't apply to this case anyway.
But if it did, on remand, under both of your constructions, you would get a nonconforming use.
I don't think because of 43.002. I think because of the definitions of use and nonconforming use in the code. Because Martin Marietta had a lease, that's why.
Let me ask you, I'm trying to understand the interplay between 35-3067 and the other sections. If I had bought property in this area that was about to be annexed and intended to build a home on it, I could have filed, I suppose, under the same section that Martin Marietta did, and said, I plan to build a home there, but under 35-3067, I couldn't actually construct a new home on it unless within 60 days I also complied with 35-3067. Is that correct?
Have you looked at in the blue handout? They're both there, Your Honor. The 35-3064 is the registration of nonconforming uses instruction. That is general. I think it applies to annexations, and I think it also applies to rezoning amendments when there's a nonconforming use.
My question is, let's say I bought this property specifically to build a home on it. I had my plans, and I bought this property. It was annexed by the city, and it was zoned something other than residential.
All right.
So I filed for my nonconforming use under 35-3604. But I can't actually go ahead and build my home on it unless I also file under 35-3067.
I believe that's right. And the reason being is that the city wants the building permits in these newly annexed areas, or the building, whatever buildings are done, that they be up to code.
But there's a very good reason. But I would have to do it in 60 days.
I think that's correct.
So I might have a non-conforming use for residential property, but that's meaningless because I didn't also meet the 60-day.
I believe that's correct, yes.
But couldn't you be? Couldn't that lead to inconsistent results? Since if you file timely under 35.3604, then you're going to be entitled to a non-conforming use, and yet 35-3067 requires an application that must be approved. Don't you already have a non-conforming use approved when you would go under 35-3067?
Yes, you have a non-conforming use of what is there.
I don't understand how that works in response to the questions that Justice Donald is asking.
Well, if you have a non-conforming use of the property, but if you intend to build, you have to follow the city ordinances because it is now in the city.
Well, I understand, but for example, under 35-3067-B1, proposed construction.
Yes.
Proposed construction may be completed upon a finding by the Zoning Commission that sufficient evidence exists that planning for the proposed use was in progress prior to annexation. Which reads to me like one of the requirements for a non-conforming use that would be permitted. I mean, so doesn't that render 35-3604 meaningless?
No, I do not think
it does. I'm just not understanding that.
It doesn't in our case. It does not in our case because we weren't going to construct something. But let's assume that we were going to construct something. We would have to follow 3067.
So you don't have to go under 3064? At all?
I don't believe so. You could perhaps be both. I haven't really thought that through because in our mind we're not doing construction, we're digging a hole.
Well, are there any permits? Let's say you're building a parking lot there.
Yes.
Would you be required to get any permits from the city?
To build a parking lot? You probably would because they have some rigid construction on parking lots, like lighting and safety and drainage.
Are there any permits that you would need under this zoning regulation in order to quarry there? Do you need to build roads in there?
No.
Do we know that from the record as a matter of law?
I think you know it from what's in here, what is in the record.
And is it because there are no building building or structure permits that are required that you believe this is not a proposed construction? I can picture a scenario where you'd need to construct things out there to allow you to quarry that could come within a city's permit authority.
That's right, but the city would not have required it in this case because the building of directors, director of building permits said that it was not necessary.
That's in the record, that there are no permits necessary to quarry.
Absolutely. That is in the, for a non-conforming use.
Well, that begs the question.
Well, no, I know, but if it existed before, there are no permits. Of course, if I went out and bought a piece of property and zoned residential right now and I said I want to do a quarry on it, well, yes, I would have to make make an application for a zoning change, naturally.
Let me ask you about mootness real quick.
Mootness, yes.
If you were to rezone this property, would the quarry be a non-conforming use? Let's suppose it was not a non-conforming use now. If you were to rezone the property, would it be a non-conforming use then?
Well, it has been rezoned. As you'll notice, they have respondents filed.
No, it's been rezoned to quarry. Let's suppose then.
That's right.
Now it's rezoned to residential. Would it be a non-conforming use then?
For residential? It's now zoned.
Now zoned for quarry.
That's right.
Let's suppose that it was not a non-conforming use when it was zoned as quarry.
All right.
It's now a quarry.
Yes.
It's zoned as a quarry. You rezoned to change it to residential.
You would have to go before the planning commission and get a rezone.
So it's not a non-conforming use under if you were to change the zone?
You mean if the city wanted to change it?
If the city changed the zone tomorrow, residential.
To residential.
Would this quarry be a non-conforming use?
It would have a non-conforming use with 52 restrictions on its use. That's the point I want to make about mootness here. Martin Marietta does not have non-conforming use rights. Non-conforming use rights are immutable. They're unassailable if you had them. What they had before the Court of Appeals acted was absolute use, right to use this as a quarry without any restrictions on them. Now, what have they got now? Since what the Court of Appeals did, they don't have those non-conforming use rights. The present ordinance can be attacked by anybody, including the respondents, within 3 years under the new validation statute. 3 years, and if it's void for any reason, like spot zoning, or like not the proper notice was given, it can be attacked even after 3 years it's being void by collateral attack. So therefore, and if that were to happen, and the ordinance were set aside, then it would be too late for them. Because you have to file these non-conforming use rights in 1 year.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Alexander, we'll hear from you later. The court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Paul Fleck, present argument for respondents.
Honorable Justices, it's indeed an honor to present this case to you today. I only regret that Wallace Jefferson can't be here to see it, because not only has he been a wonderful adversary in the case, but I consider him a great mentor as well in the San Antonio legal community. This has been a hotly contested case. There's no question about that, but it's not hotly contested anymore. And that's the reason we have presented to this court our position that the case is moot.
Well, what about his argument that if the ordinance were set aside for some reason, or what if the city decided to rezone and change this from a quarry zone to something else, where would that leave Martin Marietta?
They would have non-conforming rights, Your Honor. Or they can apply for non-conforming rights with the Director of Building Inspections, because they are conducting quarry operations on the property.
They have a CA opinion that says they don't have non-conforming rights.
Yes, Your Honor, but...
How do they get out of that?
Because they got the property rezoned. The property has been rezoned since the Court of Appeals opinion came out, and it's been rezoned for quarry district zoning. So they're allowed to do quarrying on the property. They have full rights to do that.
But it gets rezoned again. How does that affect their rights?
Well, at which point... They've been conducting, using the property as a quarry. They would be conducting a non-conforming, the use that they'd be using on the property would not conform with residential property use. And then they could proceed and apply for non-conforming rights on the property, pointing out all of the different things.
Would they have any restrictions? Are there additional restrictions that would apply to them under that scenario that don't apply to them now? If this is a non-conforming use now?
I don't agree with that position, Your Honor. And the reason I don't agree with that position is I think there has to be some definition of what their non-conforming rights are. Certainly they've defined them vis-a-vis their registration. Certainly the San Antonio City Code defines them vis-a-vis what it considers quarry operations. Simply because someone has non-conforming rights to conduct quarrying on a piece of property does not mean that they have an unfettered ability to use their property in a way that would harm or damage or somehow cause difficulties for others around them. And
What greater protection would they be afforded in this instance by non-conforming rights?
Well, I don't believe they're afforded any greater protection, Your Honor. That's the reason I think that certainly the quarry zoning that was applied to this property is under what's called a special use permit. There are certain restrictions that have been applied under this special use permit, but it certainly
would not apply if it's a non-conforming use.
That would not apply if it's a non-conforming use, Your Honor. That's correct.
So they would have greater rights if it were determined to be a non-conforming use, or greater protections.
I'm not so certain of that, Your Honor.
If you're operating under a special permit and it's rezoned, are you entitled to non-conforming use rights as a pre-existing use if you're operating under a special permit?
Yes, you are, Your Honor. You would be in this case. They could go to the Board of Adjustment, they could go to the building inspector of the City of San Antonio, make their application, and say, we've been using this property as a quarry, and these are the different ways we've been using it. And we're entitled to continue using it as a non-conforming use because it's been zoned previously as a quarry. Now that it's residential, we're not in conformity with the zoning, and as a result, we should be allowed to continue that use.
So you contend now that because of the rezoning, Martin Marietta has all of the rights that they claim in this case?
I think...
All the rights that they claim in this case.
I'm not exactly sure what rights, what additional rights they claim, Your Honor.
So you're not going to concede that?
No, Your Honor, I'm not going to concede that. Because
it doesn't sound like the case is moot. You're not going to concede that.
Well, I don't think that they could do anything more on the property than they're doing now. If that's the question you're asking.
No, I'm asking, do they have all the rights they claim?
I'm not certain of that, Your Honor. I can't say with certainty that, because I don't know what additional rights they're claiming under their non-conforming use rights. And I think that actually goes to their initial registration. I think you'd have to compare their initial registration with for non-conforming rights with the what's statutorily allowed under the special use permit for a district zoning that they were subsequently able to obtain. But we don't believe that's the only reason that this case is moot. We believe that this case has been rendered moot by the fact that we've settled the controversies that we have with Martin Marietta concerning the expansion of their court.
If this case is now moot, then that doesn't that mean you're asking us to dismiss the case as moot? Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that also requires us to vacate the Court of Appeals opinion in connection with doing that because the case in its entirety has gone moot while it was still pending in the courts. Isn't that what we would have to do?
I'm not certain about what the procedural mechanism is for that, Your Honor. I couldn't speak to that. I apologize. So we believe that there are two reasons, though, these two reasons that make this matter moot. You know, for our purposes, we've been satisfied. The controversies that we have with Martin Marietta about the expansion of their quarry have been addressed. Moreover, we think they've been further addressed by recent enactment of the legislature. Now, I know that it was brought up that the question of whether or not, if on remand this was sent back to the Board of Adjustment, would Section 43.002 of the Texas Local Government Code apply in this situation? I don't believe it would, since that was enacted and took effect, I believe, September 1st, 1999, and these properties were annexed and zoned in 1998. However, be that as it may, the legislature has addressed the issue and the question of planning and intent to use a property in a particular fashion and to protect nonconforming rights. As a result, we don't think there's any continued need to address that issue in this forum, since the legislature has very ably addressed it in another. So as a result, we think that, again, it's moot for the three reasons that we've set forth.
If you say you've settled your differences with Martin Marietta, have you settled this case?
No, Your Honor, we haven't.
Well, what do you mean when you say you've settled your differences? I mean, is there an agreement? Is there a... But you all have agreed to keep this case alive? I mean, what does that mean?
Your Honor, there have been two settlement agreements entered into between Martin Marietta, City of Chapman Park, and what those settlement agreements involve. One is a monetary cash settlement to settle a couple of related suits that have been involved, a nuisance suit and a federal lawsuit brought by Martin Marietta against some individual council members. The other involves, however, an operating agreement, which places significant restrictions upon the ability of Martin Marietta to conduct certain quarrying operations on the expansion properties. And specifically, that agreement references the existing litigation between the parties.
Are there releases contained in it with respect to this litigation, or does it in any way touch upon what the rights of the parties will be in this litigation after those agreements?
No, Your Honor, it does not. We believe that it settles, as far as we're concerned, any controversies that we may have.
Including this lawsuit?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so if we were to find non-conforming use, as they have requested that we do, then they'd still be bound by the parameters of the settlement agreement, is what you're saying, regardless of our finding?
Yes, Your Honor, regardless of your finding.
Well, a settlement agreement takes two, as I understand it. I mean, one side says, well, I'm fine, the other side says I'm not, then it's not settled.
Well,
so, and we're trying to understand what's the not now.
I think the question is, for us, as far as we're concerned.
Well, I'm sure that's true. I mean, but they're not, and can you explain why they should be, even though they're not?
Well, they should be satisfied because they've gotten the zoning they need. They've been allowed to quarry the property without any continued opposition from the city of Chavanon Park.
Would you be willing to sign an agreed judgment then that says this is a non-conforming use and vacate the CA opinion?
I don't know that we'd be willing to.
Why not? If it's settled, if it's moot, if they're not claiming any broader rights, why wouldn't you be willing to agree with it?
I couldn't say whether we would be willing to agree with that or not. I think we probably would. It hasn't been something we've actually considered. This initially was in the settlement agreement as we originally contemplated it. It was taken out of the settlement agreement at the request of Martin Marietta. And as far as we were concerned, it didn't matter one way or the other whether it was in the settlement agreement, because we were satisfied.
Can you give me your argument as to why you think this quarry would be a proposed construction?
Certainly, Your Honor. For one thing, it's set forth very clearly in their own registration of non-conforming use. They talk about all sorts of structures which they believe constitute quarrying. They talk about an asphalt plant. They talk about concrete batch plants. They talk about rock crushers in their registration.
And those would require building permits.
I believe they would, Your Honor.
And that's all in the record?
Yes, Your Honor. Certainly, and this is not in the record, unfortunately, but...
Well, if it's not in the record,
I won't make reference to it, Your Honor.
Are the findings of fact in this case adequate here for appellate review of the issues that are presented?
We think they are, yes.
You said the rock crushers would require permitting. Is that from the city or from the TNRCC?
That would be from the TNRCC.
So we're not are there any city permits that would be required to operate this as a quarry?
I don't know the answer to that question.
So that's not in the record.
Pardon me?
You didn't put in the record anywhere that there would be any permits required to operate this as a quarry.
No, I don't think I discussed that issue specifically. I think I may have discussed or referenced the fact that they do talk about concrete batch plants, asphalt plants,
but those
and things
are
of that.
TNRCC regulated, not city regulated.
Well, the buildings, their structures. I believe that they would require city permits to be built.
Mr. Fleck, there's been a lot of questions about what's settled and what's not settled, and I'm not really very clear. But the only thing I heard Mr. Robertson say was a problem, was that having it rezoned to permit quarrying as opposed to an acknowledgement that it was a non-conforming use under the original when the zoning was applied to it, is that this rezoning is now subject to challenge for several years for any number of technicalities that might ultimately leave them without the authority to quarry. Whereas, had this been declared a non-conforming use at the time the zoning was applied, they would not be subject to losing their ability to quarry. Now, it seems to me I understand that to be their problem. It's not that they're allowed to zone, they're allowed to do it now. Their problem is that if they concede that the case is moot now, they open themselves up to losing the authority to quarry where they are, because their only authority now to do it is under a zoning statute. So I understand that's what they're disagreeing with, why this case is moot, and I may be incorrect, but that's the only thing I heard them say was their problem. So why is that not a problem for them?
Well, I don't think it's a justiciability issue. I don't think that's an issue that's ripe or even necessarily before the court at the moment, or that it ever necessarily will be. It's a hypothetical question in nature, and certainly the city.
But under the posture of the case as it currently stands, do you agree that having property now zoned to permit quarrying is a different interest they now have from an original declaration of acquiring under a non-conforming use when new zoning is applied?
No, I don't think that's true. I think that
they'd be subject to the same risks in the future, whether it had been a non-conforming use at the time the zoning was applied or when they changed zoning to now permit acquiring.
I think there's got to be some definition and some parameters placed on even what the non-conforming use is. And I think those are going to be determined by reference to the city code, just as the zoning itself is determined by reference to the city code. I don't know how it would be otherwise regulated in any form or fashion.
Any other questions? Thank you, Council.
Thank you.
Well, obviously, our time split worked perfectly on the opening. On the rebuttal, I've got 5 minutes, so I'm going to fly through it. I'm going to hit merits first, mootness second. On merits, let me start with a question that Justice O'Neill has, because I think it frames it up. If the only reasonable interpretation of Section 3067 is that we did not jump through the proper hoop, if that's the only reasonable interpretation, we lose. Okay. If the only reasonable interpretation, number two, if the only reasonable interpretation is that 3067 does not apply here, which is our position and the position that the Board of Adjustment took and the Director of Building Inspections testified to, then we have a collision between the plain meaning rule and the absurd results principle of statutory construction.
Right. That was where I was going with that. So if we do find proposed construction, then that sort of wipes
out. We're dead.
Okay. That was my question.
Okay.
Well,
now,
let me ask about
point
that.
Three.
You
okay.
said that this would require permits from the city to build asphalt plants. Is that true or not?
Well, the key here, and if you look at 3067, the language that is used in there, and this is the reason that Camargo, the Director of Building Inspectors, came to what he did with building permits. We're talking about building structures that require building permits. He testified that there were no permits of that type that were required for this operation. So we don't fit under 3067.
So you can build an asphalt plant without a building permit?
Well, the asphalt plant rock pressure, we're talking about, yes, in a word. That's correct. Because we're talking, those were actually items, I know it sounds weird, of personal property
How do we address this? I mean, is there anything in the record that we can hang our hat on to say that for an asphalt plant you do or do not need city permits other than a director's?
I think that all you can rely on, and perhaps what we need to do is to provide you with that site, is the testimony of Camargo that no building permits are required
here.
Well,
but other than an individual's opinion as to that, is that all we have to go on?
Well, I mean, maybe the way to look at it is in terms of burden of proof. We don't have any evidence to the contrary. We do not have any evidence in the record that building permits, as required under 3067, are required for anything that we are doing on this property. And the way it sets up in terms of the shifting burdens, they have the burden, if they were challenging this in front of the Board of Adjustment, to establish that 3067 applied and killed us, and they didn't do it. There is no evidence in the record that a building permit is required.
Well, but their argument in response to that is going to be, you were required to get non-conforming use to go under the proper provision, which you didn't do.
Well, and our answer to that is absolutely we did. And it's explained, if you look at the reply brief on the merits at pages 18 and 19, that's where the testimony is laid out from Camargo. And he explains that in the circumstance that we have here, as he understood it, and as there is no evidence to contradict it, no building permits were required for this particular operation. Therefore, we did not fall under 3067. We fell under registration 3064.
Why isn't that just a legal conclusion? I mean, why shouldn't that have been a matter of fact in terms of developing what types of buildings were going to be done so that the law, meaning the appropriate ordinances, could be applied to make that determination? I mean, that sounds like just nothing more than a bare legal conclusion. I've looked at the building codes. I don't think you have to do anything.
Well, again, I think that it was competent testimony from the very individual whose job it is to issue building permits. And it's a huge record, actually. You can flip through it. But he talks about, we had 15 people out there crawling all over the property. and these people did not require anything that would bring them within the ambit of 3067.
They didn't even make that argument, did they, that you should have gone into 3067 and therefore, and you didn't
well, this
clear
is,
out?
Yeah, I mean, well, they do and they don't. I mean, basically what happened was, I mean, the curious thing about this is that the Court of Appeals opinion did not say that the literal application of the statute killed us. It merely said that the result of the literal application produced an absurd result. So, I mean, we're kind
of... I understand the difference between the construction problem is one issue,
right.
But they never did argue that to quarry out there, you've got to have its proposed construction, and you have to have... should have gone under 3067.
I think that's correct, and they certainly didn't establish that as part of their attack on the registration, which is their burden in order to attain something like an 11-to-1 vote.
Mr. Alexander, before your time is up, there it goes. I'm very confused about all this settlement talk.
Let me hit mootness quickly, and let me give you one site. Look at local government code, because this is not in the brief, section 51.003. On the mootness point, there's really two things. One, on non-conforming use, we have a greater bundle of rights than zoning because of the restrictions. That's point one.
What are those? Can you be specific?
I'd have to go back. I think that we have now attached the zoning ordinance to it, and special blasting permits, special hours. I can't remember what all it is. But the more fundamental one, and the reason I want to talk about 51.003, is that for a period of 3 years, anyone who's affected by this rezoning from residential to quarry district can come in and attack it. We haven't talked about that today. They can come in and challenge it. So for a period of 3 years, our zoning, rezoning the quarry district, is vulnerable to attack and litigation. The settlement doesn't settle that because it is only binding on, A, it doesn't cover this case. B, it is not, of course, binding on anybody who is not a party to the settlement.
Well, do you have to, if this lawsuit ends with Martin Marietta having non-conforming use rights, then will Martin Marietta then proceed under those rights, or must it proceed under the rights and obligations tied to the zoning?
Well, excellent question. I think that, and this is why I'm not hanging my hat so heavily on that, I cannot speak for my client as to whether, if it's confirmed non-conforming rights, it will or will not continue to comply with the use restrictions placed on
the
zoning.
Legally, what must it do?
Legally, it would not be required to do that.
It would not be required to do that,
I don't think, because it would have whatever rights you obtain by non-conforming rights. Now, as a practical matter, as a matter of comity to the city, it may well elect to continue to operate with those restrictions. But the key here, I think that the more fundamental point on mootness is that for a period of 3 years, we are vulnerable to having this zoning quarry district revert back to residential.
Well, but let me, then do non-conforming use rights, once you have them, do they then withstand any zoning change and any restrictions that may be associated with zoning for all time?
Because
the city basically, once you have non-conforming use rights, then the city just gives up control over that piece of property forever?
It gives up control of the property with respect to zoning modifications, yes. It does not give them up with respect to other things that are ordinarily available, nuisance, failure to comply with TNRCC regulations. In other words, basically pretend that the annexation had never occurred. What could this quarry district do and not do? I mean, there are restrictions that are in fact placed on quarry districts that are near cities. And what we're saying is that the mere perpetuity of the annexation, yes, and as a practical matter, ties the hands of the city beyond that in terms of impacting that with a zoning ordinance. But we would still be stuck with whatever restrictions we've otherwise
had. But you have, in fact, Martin Marietta has, in fact, settled all its disputes with the opposing parties to this litigation.
No. They did not settle this case. They settled a nuisance claim and some claim for defamation or something like that. But this case is left out of the settlement.
Right.
Period. It's carved out.
Let me ask you a question, Mr. Alexander. I know your time's up, but several questions have said it looks like Mr. Fleck's position is a reasonable reading of the statute. You said if that's a reasonable reading of the statute, you're dead.
No, only reasonable reading.
Well,
okay. I was getting to my third point.
Well, okay. The second point you said, if the statute is read according to the position that the Board of Adjustment necessarily takes, that leads to a collision of absurdity versus a determination, and then you stop. So you said how come you would lose if we read it. Now tell me how you win.
Okay. I didn't stop. I was cut off by a question. Okay. So let me get to the third one. The third one is if there are two reasonable interpretations. Okay, in other words, their interpretation is reasonable. Our interpretation is reasonable. Then what you need to look at is the Berry versus State Farm case, which is the case that says if a statute can be reasonably read as the agency has ruled, and that reading is in harmony with the rest of the statute, then we are bound to accept that interpretation even if other reasonable interpretations exist. And in this case, I think that the amicus brief points up why we have that rule. In other words, if there's two reasonable interpretations, what is the harm of going with the interpretation given by the enforcing agency? There is none, really. There is harm, though, if we don't go with it because we have builders, developers who rely on those interpretations, and that's one of the reasons that we have
okay.
the rule.
So
that's to frame it up.
I have a quick question.
Yes.
Is the settlement agreement a rezoning?
No.
Why not?
The settlement.
I understood Mr. Fleck to say it's been rezoned now.
Okay. Two independent things happened. The city rezoned, and there was a settlement agreement with Chauvineau Park. Those were independent
right.
actions.
But there has been a rezoning.
There has been a rezoning.
Why doesn't that moot this controversy? Because then there won't be any reverting back. If anyone tries to attack the rezoning, you've got nonconforming use.
Excellent question. No, we don't. Let's assume that somebody comes in and says, we are attacking, this property was zoned residential. I'm a resident, a nearby resident. I'm not a part of this lawsuit. I am attacking this rezoning to Quarry District. And let's assume they win. What do we have?
How long do they have to attack?
3 years. Local Government Code Section 51.003. They have 3 years. So for a period of 3 years, Martin Marietta is vulnerable to having this, what they now have, the ability to revert back to residential. And the settlement agreement doesn't indemnify us.
No, okay, I understand
okay.
that.
Okay.
But if it's been rezoned and it's attacked, they cannot come in and say, we have a nonconforming use now based on the rezoning.
Right, correct. At that point, I mean, let's assume we don't have nonconforming use because you've said it's moot. So we wipe out everything. We don't have nonconforming rights. We do have our zoning quarry district. We're out there happily digging dirt. And then somebody comes along and attacks it and wins. We're back to residential. And we've lost it all, and they have not indemnified that in the settlement agreement. The millions of dollars that are at risk are gone.
Where does it say 3 years? Where's the authority for that?
Local Government Code Section 51.003 says a governmental act or proceeding of a municipality is conclusively presumed as of the date it occurred to be valid if A, the third anniversary of the effective date of the act or proceeding has expired, and two, a lawsuit to annul or invalidate the act has not been filed on or before that third anniversary.
When will the third anniversary be for this?
It will be from the third anniversary from the rezoning, which occurred several months ago, 3 months ago.
Is there a law, so it's now conclusively presumed to be valid? Is that what you're saying?
The
zoning occurred 3 months ago.
Right. Okay. The zoning occurred 3 months
not
ago.
Not the
right.
third anniversary.
Right. So, yeah. And so for 3 years, as we watch the calendar, we are looking at our rezoning being vulnerable. And if it's attacked, if any lawsuit is filed before the 3 years and ultimately they win, then once again we're dead.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument. The second calls. The court will now take another group of seconds.
All right.